Good morning, everyone. I call the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee meeting to order on Thursday, March 9th, 2023. A quorum is present. Representative Hewitt, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes, and would you move approval of the minutes, please, for March 7th?
Madam Chair, so moved.
Thank you. Representative Hewitt moves approval of the minutes for March 7th, 2023. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition? Seeing none, the motion prevails and the minutes for March 7th, 2023 are approved. Welcome back, Chair Nelson. How are you today? We have House File 1695 for consideration, so I will move that House File 1695 be re-referred to Human Services Finance Committee. We have heard this bill before, but there are some additions. Would you like to speak to the bill, please?
Yeah, Section 1 of the bill was what we heard last week as the SEIU contract. Section 2 is new, and it's something that was in last year's bill that didn't get passed on the floor, but it's basically ratifying two MOUs or memorandums of understanding. And they were negotiated last year. One deals with with the pandemic. There was money that was given to the was supposed to go to the for care. 80% of it was supposed to go directly to the employees. The other 20% was supposed to be negotiated. That the first MOU or MOU realizes what is what that negotiation was and came out of. The second one has to do with there's a part of the memorandum understanding. I haven't had enough coffee yet this morning.
It's early.
About there's a requirement that they use a federally mandated electronic visit verification system to eliminate fraud. And this is a stipend that's going to go to the employees so that they can do this reporting and to get the equipment they need to do that reporting. And that's what the two MOUs do.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Is there anyone who wishes to testify on these? Seeing none. Members, is there any discussion to these two memorandums or to the bill? Seeing none, Representative Nelson, do you want to close us out? And then I will renew my motion that House File 1695 be re-referred to the Human Services Finance Committee.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Madam Chair. Like I said, this, if we had had these before, we wouldn't have to come back. We'd already be there. But these came up after they did realize that they needed to be part of the contract and part of the bill.
Right. Members, all those in favor of the motion for House File 1695 to be re-referred to Human Services Finance Committee, please say aye.
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 Any opposition? Seeing none, the motion prevails and House File 1695 is re-referred to the Human Services Finance Committee. Thank you,
Chair Nelson. Thank you, Member.
Next, we have Representative Ruth Richardson. Welcome back to the committee. It's great to see you this morning. We have House File 2099 before us. So I will move that House File 2099 be re-referred to Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. I understand that you have an oral amendment to the A57 amendment. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair. So the A57 amendment gets the bill in the shape that I would like. Clarifies that instead of the Indian Child Welfare Advisory Council, the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council would be appointing members. And on line 1.8, also wanted to clarify that that would also be the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council as well.
Thank you very much. I will move that the the A57 amendment be before us, and we is there any discussion to the oral amendment to the A57? If I could ask Mr. Gehring if you would please repeat the oral amendment.
Madam Chair, members, so the amendment proposed would be line 1.8 of the A23-0057, delete cultural and ethnic communities' Leadership Council and insert Minnesota Indian Affairs Council.
Is there any discussion to the oral amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition? Hearing none, the A57 amendment is amended. And now if you would speak to the A57 in its entirety.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. It would also include members being appointed from the Council on African Heritage as well.
Thank you very much. Is there any discussion to the A57 as amended? Seeing none, all those in favor of its adoption, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposition? Seeing none, the motion prevails and the A57 as amended is adopted. To your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 2099, as amended, would establish a task force on pregnancy health and substance use disorders to establish uniform standards for providers administering toxicology tests, develop requirements for prenatal exposure to controlled substances, provide recommendations for increasing access to family-centered substance use disorder treatment services, and evaluate the effectiveness and provide recommendations related to involuntary civil commitments during pregnancy. This work builds on bipartisan work that was accomplished a couple years ago by my former colleague, Representative Kelly Morrison, now Senator Morrison, that made needed changes to our state's mandatory reporting laws regarding substance use disorder and pregnancy. The changes allowed providers discretion as long as the patient was continuing their prenatal care and working a care plan with their provider, which included coordinating treatment options, other healthcare needs, and social services. The changes were needed as Minnesota has some of the most punitive laws regarding substance use disorder during pregnancy, and studies show the more punitive the laws, the worse the health outcomes. Mandatory reporting of controlled substance use after prenatal screenings leads to distrust of providers and avoidance of prenatal care during pregnancy. Studies show that prenatal care with a trusted provider greatly reduces the negative effects of substance use during pregnancy, including decreased risks of low birth weight and prematurity. Drug enforcement policies that deter people from seeking prenatal care do more harm. Creating discretion in reporting was an important step forward, and it's clear that our health systems would benefit from uniform guidance on standards. There are long-standing disparities. Usage rates of substances are similar across racial groups, but studies consistently show disparities where Black and Indigenous families are disproportionately screened for substances, disproportionately referred to child protective services, and disproportionately more likely to have their parental rights taken away. This bill would bring together healthcare providers, law enforcement, social workers, county attorneys, SUD providers, and other stakeholders to produce a report to the legislature on financially sustainable treatment options that can preserve families who are struggling with substance use disorders. As a state, we have very few options for families struggling with the disease of addiction, and there are some innovative treatment options around the country that are preserving families while providing treatment for parents and counseling for the whole family. Seeking prenatal care should not expose someone to criminal or civil penalties such as incarceration, involuntary commitment, loss of custody of children, or loss of housing. These approaches treat addiction as a moral failing, and we know better. And when we know better, we must do better. I do have a few testifiers here with me today that would like to speak to the bill as well, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Would you like to have, we do have an A1 amendment. Would you like to address the A1 amendment first? I don't know who's bringing the A1 forward.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Right. Are you all right with that, Representative Richardson?
Oh, that's okay. Fine, Madam Chair.
Representative Joy.
Madam Chair, I'm bringing this amendment forward again, you know, as I continue and we look at these different things coming through and the fiscal responsibility on our job is the, in page 4, line 16, it shows dot, dot, dot in fiscal year. Mm-hmm. So there is no dollar amount on this, so I guess I'm offering an amendment of $2 to just have a number in there.
Representative Richardson, would you like to speak to that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, just to be clear about the scope of the issue of not only alcohol use disorder, but substance use disorder within our state, you know, just looking at alcohol use disorder. We have more than 2,000 people who die annually related to that. And the cost is at almost $8 billion annually to our state. And that's not even including the hundreds of millions of dollars as we look at the costs related to substance use disorders. And it's important that we are investing in this work, and it's going to cost more than $2. And so I would recommend a no vote.
Thank you very much. Representative Nash, discussion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is not meant to demean the bill, Representative. This is about to talk about making sure that we have things in phase with the bills as we're hearing them. And just to be friendly, we're not going to put this to a vote, and we'll likely withdraw that. But I brought these today. We can pass them around the committee room. It's time that we do the work seriously. We have heard so many bills. And there are fewer dots in this box of dots candy than we've seen in committee and around the Capitol. And it's we as authors, and I've authored bills that have fiscal implications, and we wait for the fiscal notes. That's what we do. And we can't just bring bills and move them in and out of committee and try to move them along the way, because it's an important responsibility. It's a big deal. When we're going to possibly address an issue that is very serious, Representative Richardson, and I agree. But we can't just move bills without fiscal notes and expect them to pass without any scrutiny or any questions. So, again, I think that this is, yes, it's a capricious amendment, but it's meant to point out a serious issue of a lack of fiscal notes. Thank you.
And are you Representative Joy withdrawing the amendment?
I'll withdraw my amendment, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. And I will take exception to the comments that we are not doing our work seriously in this committee. Lead Nash, you and I take our work very responsibly, and we do our very best to do the best for the people of Minnesota, as do all of the members of this committee. So I'll take exception to the comment. Representative Richardson, I'd like to call your testifier, Dr. Elizabeth Slagle, to the table. Thank you very much for being here. If you'll state your name for the record and please begin your testimony.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dr. Elizabeth Slagle, and I am an obstetrician gynecologist practicing with Health Partners. I've spent over a decade in Minnesota training, observing, and practicing within a variety of health systems, including Hennepin Healthcare, Fairview, Allina, Park Nicollet, the University of Minnesota Health Partners, and the VA. When it comes to screening and treating substance use in pregnancy, the variation in practices within those health systems is profound. That is the main concern of the bill before you today. Who gets tested for drug use in pregnancy? There has never been a consensus research-based guideline. What is clear and undeniably so is that in practice, drug testing and reporting to CPS has been a biased process, as outlined from Representative Richardson. My patients with substance use disorder are trying to get better, but they're going at it alone because they're afraid that they'll lose their child. There is distrust in so many of the communities that we care for. One of my patients, we'll call her Maya, had a past of struggling with opioid substance use disorder. I met her during her second pregnancy. Since her first pregnancy, she'd become sober, but she had experienced profound trauma with her first pregnancy with separation from her child. It took many, many visits to establish a trusting relationship with her. Ultimately, 2 months before her due date, she developed high blood pressure, and she called our urgent pregnancy hotline asking what to do when she felt unwell with severely high blood pressures at home, and she was told to immediately report to the hospital. There, she encountered a dedicated nurse who followed protocol and ran a urine drug test on Maya as part of an initial nurse assessment. Maya's history of substance use disorder and her high blood pressure were used as indications to drug test her. Maya panicked and fled. It took many, many visits and family members who were concerned for her safety at home when she continued to have severely high blood pressures that risked stroke and death for her to come back to the hospital. Prenatal care, education, and supportive programs improve outcomes for parents and children, but the fear of having children taken away is a barrier to all of those resources. I was grateful that the Minnesota legislature in 21 did pass the law changing the mandatory reporting for requirements for substance use in pregnancy for patients who were getting treatment through their providers and undergoing that treatment process. I remember my excitement when the law was implemented, that I could actually have an honest conversation with my patients about their health without and getting them connected to comprehensive prenatal care and substance use disorder treatment. the fear and the anger around mandatory reporting would no longer interfere in a therapeutic relationship with my patients. Unfortunately, there's a number of challenges that have kind of undermined the intent of that law. First, even though medical providers are no longer required to report a mom, many others, including social workers, are. Secondly, when I hear from my pediatric colleagues about testing and reporting for infants after delivery, that did not change. And so if a toxicology test of a baby is positive for drugs, the mother is then reported, even if she's been following a treatment protocol with her provider all throughout prenatal care. So we spent an entire pregnancy building trust and helping moms get the full breadth and benefit of prenatal care. And that trust is shattered later when babies are tested for drugs and the pediatric team is forced to report. Thirdly, these nuances caused confusion for some healthcare systems. Some chose to proceed as if nothing had changed at all. So a mom in one health system might get tested and screened and reported, and another in another health system might not. When talking to my colleagues in other systems, they too are confused, they're struggling, and they are looking for guidance. There are no national guidelines, and there won't be, since state policies around requirements for testing and reporting vary widely. We need to address this in our state. The bill before you today would create a task force to look at maternal health and substance use disorder and establish uniform guidelines on when both moms and babies are tested and reported. This bill is absolutely necessary to address the racial disparities in reporting to CPS and to create a future where more moms and babies can stay together, focusing on prevention and treatment. This is a complex issue with many sectors involved: healthcare, child welfare, addiction medicine, mental health, and more. This task force would let us gather these many stakeholders at one table, learn from their perspectives, and determine how best to care for moms and babies and their families. I'd like to thank Representative Richardson for championing this issue. And again, thank you to the committee to allow me to testify. I am available for questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to testify to this bill? Seeing none, we can move to discussion of the bill. Members, are there any questions or concerns? Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Richardson. I think you know I have been a big fan of some of the provisions that we've put forward. And, you know, we think about, we know there, we have piles and piles of research that says that babies do best when they're with their mom, right? And I think we know that. We know that instinctually. We know that as a society. We just understand that on a fundamental level. And, yes, we can talk about the dollars and cents and all the dollars that we will save by making sure that moms and babies stay together. But the reality is making sure that we have better outcomes for moms and for those babies and for our communities just makes sense. And so I just want to really thank you for making these efforts, because I know it's very clear from what we've seen that the disparities exist, that they are very real, and that they are completely 100% preventable. So I really appreciate it. Thank you for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Richardson, for bringing this. This is an important thing, and I think depending on how it ends up, what it ends up costing, I think that everybody is going to, you know, probably support this. I have a question. The testifier, and I'm sorry if I forgot your name, and thank you for being here. You mentioned that there was, you know, there's no guidelines statewide, and I guess I'm in the involuntary, you know, commitment part of this bill, which I think is probably the most important, and to me, it's the most important part of this bill. But if there's no guidelines, and I'm trying to see here where, you know, I see that there's going to be a bunch of reports, it's going to come back to ranking members. I want to make sure that there's some, you know, that we're going to do something with these reports, especially when it comes to involuntary commitment. And I don't see where that is in the bill. And maybe it's premature. Maybe my comments are premature. And if that's the case, you know, so be it. But can you talk a little bit about how you envision, you know, once we get through all these studies, we put these reports together, and because there's so many partners and there's so many complexities with providers and patients and payers in this thing, how do you envision, you know, this coming back and actually having some teeth and being effective to provide that guidance moving forward?
Thank you, Representative Nadeau. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Nadeau, for the questions. I think the opportunity that the task force offers is not only an opportunity to look at putting together with all of those stakeholders in the room guidelines that can come back to help to support this work, but it's also an opportunity for other recommendations for future work that needs to happen. We know sort of the first step of this work was ensuring that we were taking the step of making like reporting discretionary to increase the number of folks who would be accessing prenatal care. But I think it's fair to say that this is a work in progress. And it's also fair to say, as we look at sort of the safety net across the state, it's actually shrinking right now, especially as it relates to family treatment. So it's thinking about sort of the interconnected pieces of this work to be able to build recommendations on a sustainable way forward. And I'm not sure if there's more to add, but I'll stop there.
I was just going to mention
your name one more time for the
record. Dr. Elizabeth Slagle. Yeah. So I was just going to state that, you know, this is basically to give guidance for best practices for hospital systems. So now we have that discretionary reporting, but we know as obstetricians that if somebody's coming for prenatal care and they're getting treatment, there's no cause for reporting. But that doesn't, my example of my patient is that a nurse might just run a drug screen, cause a chain reaction of events for a patient that is unnecessary. And we're noticing between my colleagues that when I ask, okay, what are the indications to drug test, a urine drug test, for a pregnant patient who walks into our triage unit? And the variation in that is widespread among health systems. So this gives us best practices.
Thank you very much. Representative Hewitt, apologies.
Thank you, Representative Richardson, for bringing this bill. And I want to point out to the committee members and others in the room that I like this task force idea. And the reason I like it is because providers are coming to the table. Whereas I think sometimes as legislators, we forget that we cannot and we should never legislate practice or best practices. We don't know. Even somebody like me that has 30 years in the background, or Senator Morrison right now, will say this, that yep, we can bring that knowledge to the table, but as legislators, we can't legislate practice, and that we need those people in the room that are going to do, that are patient bedside, to do that. And every physician I've worked with in my scope at CMS that has said this, John, please do not legislate practice. Let us in the room. We'll come back to you and make the recommendations. But as this is such a diverse group of people who's at this table here today, that they really do, we all have our lanes, right? And so thank you for bringing this, because these are so important so we do get it right, and that these women and their children can stay together, and you are definitely the best one to be in the room. So thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, I'll just add my own comments to this. As a former guardian ad litem for children in need of protection, this is such a critical bill. And I have always wondered why we do not, and this is a piece for another bill in a future time, why we don't do addiction treatment as whole families, because whole families live together and we need to address them as whole families, moms, dads, children, all as one. I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry, Lead Nash, apologies.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Richardson, I appreciate the bill. I think there's a lot of good work that's gone into that, and I think it's a worthwhile thing. And again, the criticism of it through the amendment was merely to talk about the fact that we need to have fiscal notes, because we're a finance committee, and we're going to move things in and out, and we should be talking about the fiscal implications of it. That's a fair commentary. So with that, I will stop, but that's my only criticism.
And fortunately for you and I, we'll see this again in Ways and Means, and we'll have an opportunity to see those notes.
I'll bring the dots.
All right, and with that, Representative Freiberg.
Sorry, a really important question. Representative Nash, are you going to pass those dots around?
The more important question is, do you get to open them? Do you get to open them and eat them? Yeah. Sorry for the humor at the table.
I'm a giver.
With that, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 2099, as amended, be re-referred to Health Finance Policy Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Hearing one, the motion prevails, and House File 2099, as amended, is re-referred to Health Finance and Policy Committee. Thank you, Representative Richardson. Representative Jamie Becker-Finn.
Pass them down, Madam Chair. No, Mike wanted some.
Chair Becker-Finn, welcome to the committee. I will move that House File 782 be re-referred to, do you want it to go to Judiciary or Ways and Means?
Judiciary.
To the Judiciary Committee. I understand you have an author's amendment, is that correct?
Yep, there's a DE amendment.
Okay. Would you like to describe the DE? or do you want to just...
Yeah, I think it's probably better if we just move the DE too, and then I can explain the bill.
Okay, fine. All those in favor of adopting the DE2 to get the bill in the order that the author wishes, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed to the adoption of the DE2? With that, the DE2 is adopted. Okay. Please tell us about your bill.
All right. Thank you, Chair Cleavorn. So taking us in a different direction from your last bill, Minnesota is facing a retirement crisis. Fewer workers have access to employer-sponsored plans, and lack of savings impact people's ability to achieve any type of meaningful retirement. Nearly half of Americans nearing retirement age, if we count retirement age, assuming we stick with 65, have less than $25,000 saved, while one in four has less than $1,000 in savings. In Minnesota, 32% of private sector employees, so that's approximately 700,000 people, work for an employer that does not offer a retirement plan. Employees of color are significantly less likely to have access to these types of workplace retirement plans. Eight other states have already enacted legislation similar to this. There are many more that have bills in the works, such as ours. To get ahead of the retirement savings crisis and help workers save, the bill before you establishes the Secure Choice Retirement Program, which is a public-private partnership for retirement savings that allows workers to set aside their wages through their paychecks. This bill has the support of the AARP, the Minneapolis Chamber, the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, Latino Affairs Council, as well as small business owners. There are quite a few letters that should be in your packets. Important to note for employers under this bill, if you already have a retirement plan that you're offering, you don't have to do anything different. But if you are not offering that, this is kind of a simple plug and play model that you could use as a small business owner. There's no requirement that you provide anything into that retirement plan. It's just one more step, simple step at payroll when you're setting up payroll for your employees. It's also voluntary for workers, so they can opt out if they have other options or if they've been doing something different to save for retirement. But again, this is just under the DE2, the program would not start until 2025. So that's one of the things in the DE2. We're also trying to conform with some changes in the Senate to make sure we're moving and discussing the same language. So, you know, we can get into the weeds, but I know you've got other bills on your agenda today. But that's the bill, and happy to move to testimony.
Thank you very much. We do have an A1 amendment. Who's offering the A1? Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Cleavorn. Representative Becker-Finn. Okay, this bill brought a lot of paper. All right, my amendment has to do with the staggered rollout. I'm going to request a roll call vote on this one.
A roll call has been requested.
Okay, so my amendments, so this is a new mandate, right, for small businesses, and they're already facing an onslaught of a wave of new obligations and regulations this session. And so my amendment is offering a staggered rollout of the plan. And so this will allow time for small businesses to roll out the new mandate. So basically the amendment Okay, so I'm just going to go over what it says. So for covered employees with 500 or more employees, there's that particular year that we would start this mandate. And then year two, it would cover the employees of 101 to 499, 12 months after the effective date. And then the third year, it would cover the employees of 100 or less.
Thank you very much, Representative Harder. Chair Becker Fenn, would you like to speak to the amendment?
Yeah, so I guess just to get this part out of the way, I would oppose the amendment. So one thing I do want to point out is that in the DE2, the start of operations would not be until January 1st, 2025, and it actually has already in the language that this would be a phased approach, that the board that's set up for this program would determine those phases. Ultimately, the smaller the, what we know in the data is that the smaller the employer, the less likely those employees, those workers are going to have access to a retirement plan like this. So this this amendment really undermines the whole point of the bill, which is to make sure that every Minnesotan, every worker has access to save for retirement in an easy way.
Thank you very much. Is there any other discussion to the A1? Seeing none, their roll call having been requested, I will ask Mr. Westerman to please take the roll.
Chair Cleavorn.
No.
Chair Cleavorn, no. Representative Hewitt.
No.
Representative Hewitt, no. Representative Nash.
Aye.
Representative Nash, aye. Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Bonner, no. Representative Berg.
No.
Representative Berg, no. Representative Freiberg.
No.
Representative Freiberg, no. Representative Hansen.
No.
Representative Hansen, no. Representative Harder.
Aye.
Representative Harder, aye. Representative Herr.
No.
Representative Herr, no. Representative Joy.
Aye.
Representative Joy, aye. Representative Kosnick.
Aye.
Representative Kosnick, aye. Representative Nadeau.
No.
Representative Nadeau, no. Representative Newton.
No.
Representative Newton, no. The nays are 9 and the ayes are 4.
With 4 ayes, 9 nays, the motion is not adopted. With 4 ayes, 9 nays, the motion does not prevail, and the amendment is, the A1 is not adopted. We have an A2 amendment. Who's bringing forward the A2?
Madam Chair, that's me, and I would request a roll call.
A roll call has been requested.
Madam Chair, I just have a clarifying
question,
if you don't mind.
Sure.
We've got a DE2 that I believe we passed, but there's also in our packet a DE1. That was handed out to us, so I'm...
The DE1 has not been offered.
Okay, that... I'm just confused why we have one then, so
right.
We don't need to... Are we not addressing this DE1?
We are not.
Okay, I think that was just handed to us over our shoulder, so I was like, what are we doing here?
Confused by that as well.
Appreciate it, thank you.
Thank you.
Please continue.
Okay, we are now, just for clarification, back to the A2. Being offered by Representative Nash, and a roll call has been requested.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members. You know, the threshold in other states where I think this has been done, Representative Becker Fenn, has been higher. I think New York has as many as 50. I believe that's where they are, but they could be wrong. You know, having been a small business owner myself and having many, many constituents and friends who are small business owners, I know that they undertake a lot of effort in keeping their small business afloat. Something like this, I think, does have carve-outs in other states where there is a threshold. I think some in nearby states are 20, 25. Well, I'm just trying to start a conversation around what can we do for small business owners who do feel heavily encumbered. And I know, Representative Becker Fenn, you are a small business owner. You've got a coffee shop. Haven't made it over there yet, but you know, I'm very sensitive to a lot of the small business owners. I do meet with them regularly in all the cities I represent, and they feel very burdened, and this is going to be another piece of really heavy amount of lifting for them to administer back office. I don't know that there's a software piece that's been articulated in your bill, and we'll get to that later, but just wanted to do a carve out for small businesses, and I do believe that 50 is a small business. So with that, I thank you.
Great. I'll just ask you to make a motion to have the A2 before us. Just
I thought I had moved the A2, but I'll move the A2 and request a roll call.
Thank you. Is there any further? Chair Becker-Fenn.
Thank you. And I do want to clarify, there are several states who have no exemption for number of employees. Some states it's 5, some states, I think you specifically noted New York. New York is 10. You know, none of the ones that I know of that have this program in it right now, I think the highest one is 25. 50 is a pretty big business. And I just want to be clear, too, as a small business owner, this won't cost me anything. This is a benefit that I can easily offer to my employees where I don't have to do the work of, like, meeting with insurance agents and trying to figure out, or, you know, retirement. I don't have to deal with some guy trying to sell me stuff. And this would be an easy plug-and-play model. It'd just be as simple as, you know, yes, there will be a software piece to it when you set up payroll, but I don't think the extra, I don't know, maybe 2 minutes per employee it's going to take me at time of, you know, onboarding with a new employee is really a burden to my business. I think it's a benefit that I can then offer to my employees. And so for those reasons and the ones I stated on the previous amendment would oppose this amendment.
Thank you. And Representative Kosnick, you have a
question? Yes, I do. I appreciate the amendment, and I think it brings up a kind of what I was – I don't know if one's – I don't think is the right number. 50 maybe is a little high, but I had a bill in Pensions Commission, and generally the way we've worked in the legislature is the Pension Commission works together collaboratively, irons these things out in with bipartisan manner and discussion and thoughtfulness, much different than sometimes the contention we have in this committee. And then the bill comes to the rest of the legislature kind of with the blessing and the approval of the Pensions Commission. So I think maybe thinking about that, when most pension bills come to us, it's a little bit more ironed out, and we don't have to decide, is it 1, is it 25, is it 50, is it 30, is it 10, number of employees. And the details are kind of a little bit more ironed out. And thinking of that, now I know why we had a DE1 and a DE2. I think the DE1 that was handed to us was something that was discussed in the Pensions Commission, is that I'm being told, and then now we have a DE2. And so I think we're kind of maybe going a little faster. And does this bill, why isn't the bill, is this the bill in the shape that the Pension Commission wants it to be presented to the legislature, or is this more the author's direction that the author wants to do it and doesn't have the blessing of the Pensions Commission that we traditionally have when we have a bill like this in front of us?
Chair Becca Finn.
So much. This bill was heard in the Pensions Commission. I know we have the chair of the Pensions Committee is here, but I will say this isn't new. This was one of the very first bills that I introduced. It was actually passed off to me from Representative Thiessen back in 2016. So this is something that's been discussed for a very, very long time. Also, it's not a pension. It's a financial tool for workers. It doesn't cost employers anything. It has been heard in the Pension Committee as to, like, what papers were handed out to you in committee. I cannot speak to. I only submitted the DE2 amendment. I don't know what that is. I don't think it's actually important. We should probably stop talking about it. The DE2 is what we moved and is the language in front of us. Again, this isn't new. We have been working on this bill. The folks from AARP, the advocates behind this bill, have been working on this for a very long time. It is very vetted. The reason we have amendments is because people have problems. We're trying to compromise to get this done. So that's the bill in front of us. It's I think it's a good bill as is, but as always, the committee process exists for us to make things better.
I would just like to redirect the committee to the language of the A2, which is page 3, line 4, delete the word 1, insert the word 50. Representative Herr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I am the chair of pensions, and it was heard in pensions. It did get vetted there. The bill actually was not in our possession, which is why we couldn't make amendments while it was in there. But it was heard. It does have bipartisan support. And this bill is actually a really good bill. And, you know, Oregon has already implemented this, and they have seen great results because of the implementation, and that it's been very successful there. And so I would encourage everyone to listen to Chair Becker Finn and, you know, and support this bill. But that is the reason why we have amendments here, is because It was thoroughly vetted in pensions. We just didn't have possession of it. So we were asking in different committees to actually adopt the amendments that were presented.
Thank you, Representative.
Madam Chair, could I short follow up?
Representative Kosnick, we're going to.
Because I was skipped over, but okay. I'm not sure that I disagree with the bill.
I don't think you were skipped over, but please go ahead.
Well, I had asked a question but follow up. But anyways, my point is I'm not sure that I fully disagree with the bill. There's some value and merit to it. I think it's something that should be explored, and I appreciate that part of the bill. Mm-hmm. I'm just used to having a little bit more of the it's already in a shape that has the blessing of the Pension Commission. So I appreciate your explanation that it wasn't in the bills in the pensions possession. But it does say pensions right on top of your DE-2. So that's why we're talking about the Pensions Commission. It is under that jurisdiction of that committee. So my point is the subject matter experts in that committee or commission usually have it detailed together before it comes to the rest of the legislature. But hopefully, there's a little different way that we're working on it this year, I guess. And I hope that.
Madam Chair, if I could just clarify.
Yes, Chair Jay.
We have the Senate file. So the Senate file was in there, but we didn't. That was what we were working off of. So it wasn't, semantics, I guess, but I mean, no. It was the language that's before us.
No. I'd like to redirect the committee to the language of the A2. Going to ask.
To the A2, hopefully they can figure out the right number. I don't know that one is the right number for sure. If you're saying 50 is too high, that in the amendment, I can see that argument too. But the Pension Commission should do the work and figure out the right number, is what I'm telling you, to the A2. I'm done. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much, Representative Kosnick. I appreciate hearing your opinions. Lead Nash.
Madam Chair, just to the author, I think that there's probably a very strong argument to be made for some sort of exclusion for an employee size. I believe many of the states that you've referenced, Oregon, California, New York, do have those. I certainly don't want to necessarily rush towards those states with open arms on many, many things. And if we can find an exclusion, then I would be happy to work with you, because I do think that there are some conversations of merit around this. Don't necessarily like the bill in its current morphology, but if we could talk about that, I think that that would be a very beneficial conversation. Thank you.
And we're going to move to the roll call. if you'd please take the roll.
Chair Cleavorn.
No.
Chair Cleavorn, no. Vice Chair Hewitt.
No.
Vice Chair Hewitt, no. Representative Nash.
Aye.
Representative Nash, aye. Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Bonner, no. Representative Berg.
No.
Representative Berg, no. Representative Freiberg.
No.
Representative Freiberg, no. Representative Hansen.
No.
Representative Hansen, no. Representative Harder.
Aye.
Representative Harder, aye. Representative Herr.
No.
Representative Herr, no. Representative Joy.
Aye.
Representative Joy, aye. Representative Kosnick. Representative Kosnick, aye. Representative Nadeau.
No.
Representative Nadeau, no. Representative Newton.
No.
Representative Newton, no. The nays are 9 and the ayes are 4.
With 4 ayes, 9 nays, the motion does not prevail and the A2 is not adopted. We now go to the A3 amendment. Who is offering the A3?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's mine.
Representative Nadeau, would you like to move the A3?
Just for a second, I do, yes. This amendment is basically because of the DE DE amendment. It's a mess. You know the line numbers in here. Your amendment's not a mess. My amendment to that amendment is a mess. So I just want to talk about the issue that I'd like you to consider. This is a good bill. This is a good bill. It's all voluntary for the most part. There's a little bit of money here and there, but this is a good bill for employees, and it provides an offering for small businesses to help their employees retire, save for retirement. But what I'm concerned with in section six of your bill, it's the responsibilities of covered employees. And I like the membership of the board, which is in the next section. But the responsibilities, I'm concerned with allowing the board to assess penalties on their own as far as for failing to enroll employees. I'm also concerned where there's penalties that can be imposed on these small businesses that maybe don't make timely contributions. And I get most payroll deductions now are done through a through a service, but there still has to be adequate funds in those accounts, and there's all kinds of reasons that challenges occur for small businesses. And I would really just appreciate the if you can think and consider maybe moving forward that we move those penalty adoptions back to the legislature for them to impose those penalties. And with that being said, I'd love you to speak to the concept, and I'm going to withdraw this amendment, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Doe. Chair Beckerfin.
Yeah, thank you. And I appreciate the amendment and the conversation. One of the reasons that we are sending it to judiciary and civil law and not ways and means is because we cover civil penalties in my committee. And so I do expect further conversation specifically on that issue. I think the problem with the amendment as it is, and I appreciate the conversation again, but kicking it to the legislature, I don't know if you've known, I know you're new, but we don't move very fast. And so I think kicking it to a future legislature when we're the legislature right now and could figure out what those penalties should be, certainly open to having those conversations so it's more clear what those are. We'll say the DE2 also says in the first year, it would be a written warning. There would be no penalties in the first year if employers fail to do what's asked of them in the bill.
Thank you, Representative Beckerfin. Next, we will move to testimony now that the bill is in its proper order. I have two individuals wishing to testify, Beth Cadone and Mary Jo George. If Beth would come forward first, and then we'll move to Mary Jo George. If you'd please, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Cadu, and I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We're an organization of about 6,300 businesses across the state of Minnesota. About 80% of our membership are of 100 employees or less. We do certainly agree with the worthy goal of encouraging savings. However, we do have great concerns over the bill in its current form. We do believe it has many unknowns related to penalties, as was just discussed. The timelines, we have concerns over the implementation, and it does not have a small business exemption as has been provided in most other states that have this, and realize I think the testifier was that it was only about 8 states that currently have this. For example, New Jersey's at 25 employees. New York is at 10. Colorado, Illinois, and Maine are at 5. Oregon and California do not. They're the ones that do include all employees in this. However, they really had a very long phase-in. For example, I believe Oregon was like a 6-year phase-in before they got down to having all employees included. Realize that, Minnesota already opposes a higher cost of doing business than most other states. And what we really do have concerns this year is because this bill would be added on to all the other new employer mandates that we see are moving through this year. So we'd really urge you to consider the impact of those provisions, such as the sick and safe time, the 24-week paid leave proposal, and when those are being timelines and when those are implemented. So the bill, like I said, with all these other new employer mandates that we're seeing, would really impose additional cost burden, especially a hard hit would be our small businesses. Many of them do not have sophisticated HR systems, right? A lot of times it's just the business owner doing their payroll. True, this mandate is maybe less onerous than some of the other ones we're seeing, but it still would add a new requirement. It would expose them to cost and penalties that we were not clear on what those penalties would be. I would note in the bill that the employees would be able to change their contribution limit for the pension at any time. A lot of times there are some restrictions. For example, with the plan I'm in at work, you can only do that quarterly. You can't just do it at any time. So I would urge the committee to look at that as well. And then for the penalties, I do appreciate that the amendment that came on did put it in at least to say we will do a warning the first year. Certainly thank you for including that. We do think the penalties really should be set by the legislature and not by a non-elected board, so I would hope that would be addressed in the next committee as well. And then as I mentioned, that the timeline, please consider just the impact of these other bills that are moving through. If those get implemented on top of this, we do think this would really create a lot of confusion, especially for our small business owners, and strongly urge an exemption for those small businesses be included. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate your thoughtful comments. Mary Jo George. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mary Jo George, and I'm the Associate State Director of Advocacy for AARP Minnesota. And on behalf of our nearly 620,000 members, we appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of this bill. We want to thank Representative Becker Finn for bringing the bill forward, and as she indicated, it's been a long time that we have been pushing this legislation forward. You know, and as you've heard, Minnesota faces a significant retirement savings gap with far too many workers not saving for their own future. At this rate, an unacceptable number of middle-class retirees will be unable to afford their basic needs in retirement for things like medicine, utilities, and rent. Yet we can get ahead of the crisis by passing a Secure Choice program, which allows workers to set aside their wages in an easily accessible auto IRA plan. You know, AARP survey data continues to show that small business owners want to offer retirement savings plans and employees want to save, but the problem is one of a lack of access. And this is because, and I think you've heard today, that costs can be prohibited for small employers and small businesses to provide their own plans. And why people might suggest that individuals could open their own individual retirement accounts, only 5% do, and that number has not budged in decades. Greater access to retirement savings plans can help thousands of households build retirement savings and reduce wealth disparity. In fact, employees are 20 times more likely to save merely by having access to a workplace retirement plan. Moreover, the benefits of increased retirement savings go beyond individual savers and their families. According to our research, Minnesota could save as much as $258 million in public assistance over the next 10 years simply by having people save for their own retirement. Affording Minnesota workers an effortless way to save for retirement not only saves taxpayer dollars, as people will need less social services, but it can help folks retire with dignity. And finally, we just believe that we, in order to rebuild the promise of financial security in retirement, we have to look at new modern expanded options, which this bill aims to do. So we really urge your support, and many states have had bipartisan support, so we would really hope for bipartisan support on this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. George, for your testimony. Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to testify? I see none. Is there any further discussion to the bill? Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Becker Finn, this is a good bill. I like the bill. But having been the owner of small businesses in the past, most of my employees were part-time. Would they be covered by the bill as well?
Chair Becker Finn.
Yes, there is different from some of the other worker issues we've been talking about this year, though this would not apply to people under 18.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Follow up. Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Cleavorn. I need some clarification, or perhaps you can explain this to me. So when there are plans that people opt into, is there a minimum or a maximum that people can contribute each year?
Chair Becker Finn.
Thank you. So this would be one plan that you can opt into that would be set up by this board, and then the board would determine what those amounts are.
Thank you. Representative Harder.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Representative Herr.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Becker Finn, for carrying this bill. It is a long time in the making, and really appreciate you giving opportunity to those who may not necessarily have them. I just wanted to point out that Oregon has the longest-running program and has seen significant early success. And within 3 years of the program, 17,121 employers had enrolled in the plan, and 112,652 employees had funded accounts, and plan assets now total $156 million. That, and we all know in investments, it's the assets that generate you know, returns, which then fund the plan. And so it actually is a self-sustaining type of plan, and it doesn't cost us anything to do this, maybe just early on when we're setting it up. I also want to note that Pew Research indicated that this tool also increases private savings as well. So some of our lowest income earners working a job that sometimes they're switching from multiple jobs because That's what they have to do. This is a great tool for them to do that. And they otherwise would never have the opportunity. And then they would have to navigate a complex financial system. As many of you know, I spent 15 years in the private sector in investments and finance. And it is very complex. You think you get a financial advisor and you're going to get the advice that you need, but you don't. You don't realize all the fees and costs. You don't realize whose best interest is at stake. You know, they often don't even want to service you if you're a low-income person who's not going to contribute a lot. If you know, and so are they don't give you the best service. And so, and I know that firsthand. And so I really appreciate the fact that this bill is coming forward, and we will be giving opportunities for those who may never get the chance to open up an account that will be in their best interest and for their savings. So thank you so much, and I hope for support of this bill.
Thank you, Representative Herr. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have to be careful with my microphone so it doesn't fall to the floor again. So, Representative Becker-Finn, I appreciate the goals of this bill and certainly think that having people be able to save is vital. I'm not 100% there with this version of the bill yet. I think there's some conversations that are worth having. And, you know, in addressing you, I see your head nodding a couple times. I think there's some things that we can talk about and tighten this up so that it's less onerous on business owners. Talk about some of the exemption levels. So 50 isn't enough. Maybe we come up with a different number. I think being able to rely on retirement and savings is important. It adds some stability in people's lives. Very, very important. I know that folks aren't necessarily saving right now because inflation is through the roof and it's putting a huge pinch on people's budgets and lives. But I think that we're not there yet with this bill, and for that reason, I'm not going to be supporting it today.
Thank you, Lead Nash. And before you close, I'll just add my own closing comments. I was very fortunate when I was young to have an employer who had just a small private plan. And that employer wasn't very big, and he taught me the value of saving and the value of time and what happens when you save little amounts over time. And so I greatly appreciate your bringing this bill forward, and I'll ask for your closing comments.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Cleavorn, and appreciate the discussion. Again, one of the reasons I thought that it needed to make another stop in another committee is so that we can keep working on this. I recognize you don't serve on my committee, but it will be coming to Ways and Means after that. I would like to get us to a point where we can have more it is a bipartisan bill. It has been, but I would love to grow on that and get the bill as good as we can. So I appreciate the conversation today and would appreciate support. Thank you, Chair Cleavorn.
Thank you. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 782, as amended, be re-referred to the Judiciary Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
No.
Hearing a few. House File 782, as amended, is re-referred to Judiciary and Ways and Means. Thank you, Chair Becker-Finn.
Thank you.
Next, we will have House File 2190, and I'm asking Representative Nadeau to present this bill this morning.
Oh, look at Danny, did you bring treats?
I forgot. What's that?
Yeah, this is his first committee, Madam Chair, and I'm wondering if there are treats, as is customary.
I object if there's none. What kind of committee are we running?
I brought dots.
This committee does not approve of hazing of freshman legislators, so
I think we should put that to the vote.
I appreciate that, Madam Chair.
So, Representative Nadeau, I'm excited to have you present your first bill in committee. So I will move that House File 2190 be before the committee, and it is to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. With that, the bill is now in front of us. If you would please present the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. This is a pretty simple bill. It's one-time funding, provides $735,000 in FY24, $201,000 in FY25. For the Commissioner of Administration to develop a roadmap for implementing an enterprise grants management system. The study would assess the viability of implementing a single grants management system for the enterprise. If the results of the study determine an enterprise-wide system is feasible, the study will further include
analyzing the available technology options. It'll recommend changes to the state's organizational model, operational controls and processes. It'll look at staffing and other resource needs. It will address high-level system requirements, estimated costs, and implement and provide an implementation roadmap. And there is somebody here from admin that can answer any hard questions if you have them, and I expect lots of them.
Okay. Thank you very much for the presentation of the testimony. Do we have anyone from the Department of Administration who wishes to testify? Seeing none, that's fine.
Oh,
we
no.
will, if we have questions, we'll bring them forward. We're putting you on the hot seat this morning. Members, do you have any questions? Lead Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to, I guess, the presenter, not the author, but to the presenter, where did this bill come from? How did we arrive at this bill?
It came from the OL.
Excuse me.
Sorry.
That's all right. Representative Nadeau.
This is one of the recommendations that the OLA report provided. Straight out of the recommendations.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Always speaking through the chair. And I think this is why I wanted to make sure that we asked, because the chair is the first author, I'm second. And I think that what we're seeing is that this, we can do bipartisan work, and we can make sure that we're trying to do right by the state of Minnesota as we do some of these things that will happen. Grants administration will continue, and providing more guardrails, more accountability, more reports. Everyone loves reports. Is a very worthy goal, and I think is rises to the level of full support on this.
Thank you. Members, any other questions, concerns? Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Claiborne. And Representative Nadeau, is there a timeline for this to be completed?
Representative Nadeau.
I'm not totally sure. I'm assuming that the timeline can't go much past 2025, because that's when the funding runs out. So if there's a timeline in excess of that, I am unsure. I'm sorry.
We can ask MMB or admin to please come and answer the question. Thank you.
Well, they are here. You left me up here by myself.
It's your first bill, Representative Nadeau.
Thank you.
If you'd please state your name for the record and answer the question, please.
Good morning, Chair Claiborne and members. My name is Stacey Christensen, and I'm the Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Administration. And my apologies, Representative, but I'm here to answer all the hard questions. I'll do the best I can. So in terms of a timeline, we anticipate it will take 2 to 3 months to conduct the RFP process to select the consultant to perform the study. And during that same period, admin will work to acquire a full-time employee needed to manage the process. After that, we anticipate the study will take approximately 8 months, with a completion date expected in September of 2024.
Thank you very much. Representative Harder, did you have a follow-up?
That's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other questions or concerns? And with that, Representative Nadeau, I'll ask you to wrap up the bill discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to introduce it. It was fun. Thank you guys for being nice to me, other than Representative Harder. I do think this is an important bill, and I work for the county. Everybody knows that. I work a lot in contracts, and we have a lot of systems that are redundant. And if there's opportunities to find more efficiencies to ensure that we have more of our dollars actually going to people, serving those people's needs, changing those families, I am all behind that. So I recommend a yes vote on this bill.
And I'll just wrap up by saying this bill is really important. We have systems all across our state that cannot speak to each other. And so to have a comprehensive enterprise-wide system would be a wonderful thing. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 2190 be re-referred to Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion prevails, and House File 2190 is re-referred to Ways and Means. Thank you. And with that, members, that is all of our business for today. Our next meeting will be on Tuesday. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.